far should the state of Michigan go in luring business and new jobs with tax breaks? That's at the heart of the debate over incentives like the Good Jobs for Michigan program and whether it should be continued. This program lets companies retain at least a portion of the state income taxes paid by new hires staffing new developments. Detroit News business columnist Daniel House told us on Thursday, this program has produced many developments and new jobs, and while many decry these incentives as crony capitalism, they do matter.
I think it's a tool in the toolbox. We don't live in an ideal world. In an ideal world, states wouldn't have to pay businesses to invest. But the reality is that there are states, rival states to Michigan, that will pay and do pay a lot. Now, is that the only reason that a business decides to invest? I think the answer is no. It has to do with labor availability and expertise and a whole lot of other, there's a long list of things. But it can be a major decider going forward. And I think that's really the thing people have to grapple with.
With us now, Michigan State University economist Charlie Ballard. Charlie, businesses want lawmakers to continue this Good Jobs for Michigan program. Is there an economic argument for doing that?
I'm very skeptical about these programs. I think it's not true that we should never even consider them, but we should only go ahead with them if we've really thought about them extremely carefully and if we've got lots of accountability built in. And my objections really come partly from fairness concerns and partly from concerns about efficiency. Let me start with fairness. Why does this company get a break and everybody else doesn't? If you look at the companies that are given these fabulous incentive packages, big tax breaks, what do they all have in common? They're all big operations that will lead to a photo op and a press release. That means that the rest of us have to pick up the bill. And so anytime you're giving away tax revenue to somebody, that means that somebody else has to make up that difference, or more likely in Michigan, if we don't make up the difference, that means that we just have less and less and less revenue. And is it any surprise that our schools are often struggling and that our roads and sewers are in terrible shape? So that's one big objection. The other objection that I have has to do with, do these really do the job? And a study by Tim Bartik at the Upjohn Institute in Kalamazoo suggests that at least 75% of the projects that are touted as having been brought by some tax incentive, at least 75% of them would have happened anyway. So in a lot of cases, we're just throwing away revenue and we're not really getting a whole lot in return.
It's actually, and when we talked to Daniel last week, he did say certainly some of these projects would have come along, but there are ones that, especially with this Good Jobs for Michigan, that allows, you know, if you put up a big new development with a lot of jobs that pay at least 100% or more of the regional average wage, so they have to be decent paying jobs, pointing to projects like Ford redeveloping Michigan Central. And he said, Bill Ford said to him, yes, I'm doing this, and yes, I'm going for the incentive and recapturing that personal income tax the new workers would pay.
No, I understand that. And I think it's true that some of these projects may have not happened without the incentive and may have made the place better. But when I look at Michigan, I don't think our biggest problem is that we don't have enough of these tax break-driven projects. You look at the Amazon. Amazon didn't choose to not come to Michigan because we didn't offer them a lot of incentives. We offered them billions of incentives. Why did they not come? They didn't come because we don't have the transportation infrastructure and because we are lacking in talented and skilled workers. And I think we, you know, if I were looking for an economic development strategy, I would turn much more to trying to educate and train our population so that we have a better skilled workforce. And I would fix the roads and provide for better public transportation.
During the Snyder years, we certainly saw the state tax burden shifting from businesses to individuals in a very, very big way. Was that needed, in your opinion?
I kind of think we overdid it. I don't think that we made up the revenue as much as we should. I mean, in the Snyder years, we fell further below the national average in what we call tax effort, which is the percentage of the economy that goes to state and local taxes. And you see that every time you drive on any road in Michigan. We just haven't collected enough revenue. Now, I will say, in praise of Governor Snyder, he did get rid of some of these credits, or at least he capped them. And let me give you my favorite example, the film tax credits, which everybody was saying, oh, we're going to build a new industry in Michigan. Well, look, we gave them 42% of their operating expenses. My goodness, if you're going to pay some company 42% of their operating expenses, you can get anything to appear to be profitable, right? If we subsidize them enough, we could get growers to grow grapefruit and oranges in Marquette. But is that really a good use of our resources?
Fair enough. Now, Detroit News columnist Daniel House's argument is that Lansing, with its the legislature's kind of record of under-delivering, if they had that money that had been used, let's say, for this Good Jobs for Michigan, they wouldn't be spending it in a better or more useful way. And we have the crumbling roads and poor school performance to demonstrate that. And by offering these tax incentives, we have Michigan Central getting redeveloped by Ford. We got GM converting Detroit Hamtramck to an electric plant. Dan Gilbert's building on the old downtown Hudson site. FCA's expanding its Jeep assembly operations in Detroit. What do you think?
Well, fair enough. I don't want to say never, 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 yeah. But I do think we should be extremely careful, and we should build in lots of accountability. Because one of the biggest things that we did wrong with all these credits and tax breaks that we've given over the years is that we didn't have adequate safeguards. And so anytime anybody showed up and said, hey, give me tax breaks and I'll create jobs, we just said, well, where do I sign and how many millions do you want? But we really didn't, I don't think we got the bang for the buck. So maybe these credits going forward will be handled better, but I just want us to go into this with our eyes open and know that a lot of these things have not worked out very well.
Tell us, how do we distinguish between, you know, as we look at them before getting passed, between tax incentives that do what they're supposed to do and they hold corporations to account if they don't fulfill their promises, and the ones that kind of offer corporations tax breaks and the public really doesn't get the benefits?
Well, I think that's a really good question. And the answer is that I think it's difficult to do that. If it were up to me, I would have some of these, if you're going to offer some sort of an incentive, don't go hog wild with it. The bigger the incentive, the more likely I think it is that some of the money will be wasted. So I would have limits on what we do. And I would also say, give it up front and give it once, rather than, okay, we're going to give you a tax break that'll last for 10 years and you won't have to pay any payroll taxes or income taxes and the company will get to keep all that. That kind of open-ended commitment, it seems to me, is not something that is likely to be efficient. One of the problems is, what if they promise that they'll do something and then they change their minds? Are we going to take them to court? Are we going to put them in jail? It's very difficult to enforce these agreements.
Well, certainly, as we've seen with District Detroit, the promised Illich development, all that ancillary development around Little Caesars Arena that actually at this point is still parking lots.
Just parking lots. And really, the history is littered with examples like that, where there was a big press release and a lot of excitement, and then the results really did not live up to the hype.
We would say for this income tax capture, you don't get it if you don't produce the jobs, if you don't do the development and you don't pump in the jobs, and there's a cap of 15 projects a year. Is that the kind of guardrails that these things need?
I would have that kind of guardrails at a minimum. And I would just, 10 years from now, let's look back and see whether these projects that are so highly touted right now, whether they really delivered what we thought they were going to deliver. If so, well, maybe we can continue with those kind of guardrails. So, Sandy, you probably know that Michael Lefebvre of the Mackinac Center and I do not always agree on things.
Yes.
In fact, there's a lot on which we don't agree, but he and I are, I think we see this in a similar way, that it seems like these tax breaks to certain individuals, what they mean is that the rest of us are going to have to pick up the bill. And that's fundamentally, I think, unfair. And it's also, there's really big questions about whether these are efficient uses of our resources. If it were up to me, I would be very cautious about these kinds of things. And I would think about other ways to spend our tax dollars.
Michigan State University economist Charlie Ballard. Always great talking with you, Charlie.
Thank you, Cindy.